Good morning, everybody. The thing I want to talk about today are my health conditions and exactly what they are, because I have been getting inundated with questions regarding my health conditions. And they will be in order from the top of the list in alphabetical order. That's how I'm going to try to do this. Allergies. I have seasonal allergies that pretty much change with the seasons, and I don't really get no relief. I have asthma, which I've known this since God knows when. I really discovered this in 2013, but I did not get no formal treatment for my asthma until 2014. And then I came to this doctor, Dr. Yukoa, who said, "Oh no, you don't have asthma." And then right before I switched doctors and I went to Dr. Reyes, he put me back on my asthma medication after he took me off of it for a year, which is the worst mistake he ever made, by saying, "No, you don't have asthma, you have allergies." So, then it was to the effect that I went to Dr. Reyes, and eventually, after going to Dr. Reyes, he did put me back on breathing treatments and asthma medication, because I started, really, it was in 2018, it was in February, after my dad just went through all that in January, I started sneezing and coughing and coughing, could not stop. Wheezing, sounded like a whistling sound when I breathe. And when everything pertaining to asthma. So, my doctor comes out, Dr. Reyes, and he examines me, he looks at me, and he listens to me and says, "When you were little, did you have asthma by any chance?" I said, "Not that I recall." And he goes, "Well, you've got it now." And he goes, "You need to take this medicine." I believe he gave me prednisone. He gave me Proventic, which is an inhaler. He gave me those things like that. And then I said, "Seriously, you know, what the heck?" I said, "This is crazy." So that's me finding out for the second or third time that I have asthma. And every time I go to the hospital or anything else, tell people I have asthma. Also, those are my first two conditions. Those are lung-related conditions. Now I'm moving to my heart. I have AFib. I have atrial fibrillation, which means basically that your heart is irregular. That's what AFib is. It is regular heartbeat. And then I have something called benign positional hypertension, which means if I go from any position too quickly, especially sitting to standing really quickly, it can cause me to have, you know, be dizzy. So, I always have to be careful and have to watch out how I do stuff. And then, in terms of me having a, I have that disease or condition, depending on what's going on in my life, I can have, when I was at home, I had low blood pressure. And, you know, it was so low, my top numbers were both, you know, double digit numbers. My top number might have been 100, 100 over 80. And I think the normal is 120 over 80. But, you know, my dad's numbers were crazy. I've had a couple of crazy numbers, too. I've had it be 160 over 110 before. That is really extremely high. But that's not the worst number I've ever heard on somebody. My dad once had blood pressure so high. And he's had some crazy numbers too. A lot worse than me. Like his 175 over, I want to say his was 175. And then the bottom number was something like 76 or some shit. And I said, damn, Dad. I said, don't you think you need to take it down a notch? I said, shit, you're scaring me with your high blood pressure. So needless to say, I have to be careful with all kinds of stuff. Then I have, these are the conditions, the most serious of my conditions, that prevent me from having any kind of surgery at all, which is kind of scary in some ways because I got gallstones and my gallbladder was to rupture, or my appendix was to rupture, my spleen was to rupture, anything like that, I would just be dead. Dead. But they took x-rays of my heart and lungs, and they did an EKG and all this crap. All this stuff came back like I had a heart and all that of a 16-year-old. And me being, that's a miracle. because I have congestive heart failure. I have diabetes. I have congestive heart failure and diabetes and lymphedema, which are all inherited. Okay. My grandpapa on my mom's side of the family, her dad had congestive heart failure, diabetes, and high blood pressure and something else. Oh yes, I cannot forget the almighty oxygen dependency and obstructive sleep apnea, which made him have to use a BiPAP machine as well. So needless to say, the fact that I'm still here is a miracle. It is a miracle within itself. I have general anxiety disorder, PTSD, and depression. And I also have obstructive sleep apnea, and I have lymphedema, which lymphedema, for those of you who don't know, your lymphatic system is basically like the drainage pipes and basically like the sewer system or the plumbing system of your body. And basically the lymph fluid is fluid that is full of protein, water, and salt, and blood. Sometimes it appears to be oily looking, and sometimes it appears to be of a, like a, I don't know. It's protein and water. Basically, it's all the junk that should be filtered out through your lymphatics. But when your lymphatics don't work, your lymphatics are all over your body. But when your lymphatics don't work, that's when you have lymphedema. You know, if I didn't have lymphedema, I would be like 200, 300 pounds. But I've got lymphedema. Therefore, I'm carrying fluid, extra fluid in my abdomen, in my legs, all throughout my lower body, possibly even in my upper body. But my arms don't feel like they have lymphedema. It's just my legs. And I've got one foot that is so swollen, and my feet are so tender, and it's so hard to really walk on my feet. And I put all this pressure on my legs when I'm walking. It doesn't hurt me to take a few steps to sit down in a chair. It doesn't hurt me to take, you know, a few steps to you know, pivot and get in and out of a wheelchair, or, you know, that sort of thing. I can do that all day long. But you get me to start walking even 8 or 10 feet, and by the time I get to the wall close to where the closet and the bathroom is in my room, I'm hurting. And I can't, literally hurting. And I cannot go any further. So, I axed the walking goal off of my... Originally, I came into PT with the goal of walking, stand, pivot, transfer, walking, let's see, you know, that sort of thing. But the more I started trying to walk, the worse I felt. So, I discovered that it was so much easier for me to scoot with my feet in a manual wheelchair. Basically, I'm doing the same damn thing, but I'm just not putting all that pressure on my legs. I'm still using my legs to propel myself. You know, it's just, there's so much that I have been learning about myself through all this physical therapy. I'm doing physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy. And I'm also doing, seeing a psychologist and a psychiatrist. You know, I'm still having a lot of issues to come to terms with that this is a permanent disability. I will never be what I used to be again. That is gone. That is just totally freaking gone. I will never be what I used to be again. And instead of crying about the shit that I can't do anymore, I find it a lot easier to think about what I can do. You know, and I keep telling myself, and motivation here for me is, you can go a lot of places in a wheelchair, but you can't go nowhere in a bed. I keep telling myself that. And I'm sure that along the way, I'm going to find a lot of barriers and a lot of, you know, accessibility things that I need to, you know, make sure that are accommodated. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to have to do a whole lot of things, you know, different than what it used to be. I don't really know what to do anymore, except, number one, thank God I'm alive. No matter what the situation, thank God for what He's allowed me to do, because it's incredible. I've had several close calls that could have ended my life, but yet I'm still sitting here talking about the things that I've been through. And you know what? I'm gonna be okay. That is my reality. I'm gonna be okay. I have to hang on. This is what I'm trying to do. I've set a goal for myself to be out of here in a couple months. I keep progressing with therapy this way. And I'm sure that every month they're going to tell the insurance that, oh, she's done this, she's doing this, she's doing this, she's doing this, blah, 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 blah. Well, the one thing that I want to do, and I'm going to make sure that they all know it, is I want to practice going in and out of the bathroom with a freaking wheelchair. Seriously. That's the one thing I want to do. I want to practice going in and out of a bathroom with a wheelchair. Because, number one, I don't want to be stuck and not be able to go in and out of a bathroom with a chair. I want to eventually, one day, be able to have a place, possibly even of my own, where everything in the house or apartment is wheelchair accessible at the right height, and everything where I can go into the kitchen, do what I need to do, do what I want to do in the kitchen, use a microwave, get stuff out of the freezer, make my coffee, do whatever I want to do, go in the bathroom, transfer to the toilet, transfer in and out of the shower, take my bath, take my shower, whatever, use the bathroom, do whatever I need to do, get in and out of bed, you know, on and off a chair or a couch, you know, whatever. Just whatever I choose to do. Because the reality of this is that I'm 31 and I really should not be connected at the hip to anyone. I should be free. This is my life. And here I am. I don't want to be 30 years from now, or even 40 years from now, if God let me live that long. I don't want to be regretting what I could do now if I would make the right accommodations for myself, and versus what I don't want to be regretting when it's really my time to be old, the things that I could do now. No. No. I have to start trying. It's time to start living. It's time to start living. My goal is, and the reason why I'm wanting to get the hell out of here in such a hurry is because I don't know how long my dad's got to live. I don't know what's going to happen with my dad. Too many unanswered questions. Too many uncertainties. I don't know what's going to happen with my dad. I have literally been half asleep, talking out of my head, not making any sense, all because of things that I don't possibly understand. You know, why is half asleep? My dad calls me and he's talking to me, and I'm talking out of my head, not making any sense. And I tell him, hello, you called and woke me up, and I don't feel good, and you know I don't feel good. And I've spent many a sleepless nights for the last 3 weeks worrying about what's going to happen to you. He doesn't get it. I flat told him tonight, I said, damn it, Daddy, you're going to give me gray hair. You're going to give me a whole head full of gray hair. Do you want that? I don't think he does, but I don't think he understands. And that's the only way that I know how to make him understand is by telling him he's going to give me a head full of gray hair. I mean, if I didn't give a crap about him, I wouldn't worry. I wouldn't give a damn what happened to him. But seriously, in all seriousness, this thing with my dad, all the shit that's happened with my dad, has only made me want to try even harder to get out of here and try even harder to convince these people to let me try to do some things on my own. I have got my church, a lady from my church that's trying to help me. It's trying to back me. I'm doing this podcast, and I told my mama that the revenue that I've gained from doing this podcast, from doing these shows, that I was going to help her to try to contribute to the household in some way, because I feel terrible about the 2 years that I've missed, and I know damn well they need me. My parents need me. Regardless of whether anyone wants to admit it or not, my parents need me, and as long as they're alive and breathing, I'm going to help them, because they so graciously raised me, changed many and many crappy diapers, stayed in the emergency room for many hours on end with me as a baby, as a kid. I was chronically ill. I had high fevers. Hell, my first Thanksgiving ever, I was sick. They had to rush me to the emergency room because I had a fever. If that doesn't set the stage for a life of being chronically ill, I don't know what does. I had chicken pox when I was 3 months old. 3 months old. My mom put socks on my hands to keep me from scratching my nose. I got a chicken pox scar on my nose. Or I did. I don't even know if it's visible now. But I did have a chicken pox scar on my nose for many, 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 many years. And also as a kid, I noticed where I had a heart monitor embedded in the top of my scalp. I mean, that place ain't there now. I used to have a bald spot, and I used to have a scab that, and I would notice that I could scratch it, and, you know, the scab would come off, you know, and I could feel where there was like a little bump where there used to be something there in the top of my head. And one day I asked my mama, or my grandmother, said, "Mom, what is this?" "Oh, when you were born, you had a heart monitor embedded in the top of your head." "Oh my God." My mom said, "Yeah, you like to die 3 or 4 times. They like to lost you. I like to die and you like to die. It was a very bad birth." So needless to say, I'm lucky that I'm here, and God has made me one hell of a strong individual, and I thank God for allowing me to live and to flourish and to become such a strong individual. I thank God for what I've been able to do. It's incredible. God's gonna help me get through this. You know, my dad has literally gone crazy, and he has cried and threw a fit about being in hospital for 3 weeks. Imagine how I feel about being in here for 2 years. Come on. The 3 weeks that he spent in the hospital, I could do that standing on my head. He stood a fit about being in there for 3 weeks, and I could have done that standing on my head. I've been in here for 2 years, and I've been I'm about ready to Wile E. Coyote my way out of this place. I'm so tired of being here. I'm willing to walk through the flames of hell to get out of here if I had to. Believe me, I wholeheartedly believe that I am the number one person in my dad's lives. It's like, in my mom and dad's life, I'm the number one person. You know, they've helped mold me into who I am. You know, I may not, and I'm beginning to realize that everybody that I've ever thought I would have a chance with, I don't. To one day grow old and die alone with no kids, with no husband, no nothing. You know what? Oh, well. If all I am is a fair weather friend to somebody, they call me when they feel like they got time for me, they play with my heart, I don't need that, I don't want it, I don't have time for the fake ass shit. If they're not really real and there for me and when I need them the most, then to hell with them too. I'm really beginning to question, what friends do I have now? Who really is my friend? Who really is gonna be there for me? Because since my dad's been sick and in the hospital, I've called Timothy and Doug half a trillion times, it seems, and neither one of them have answered the phone for me. And I really do have an interest in Doug. I find that we believe and we think alike and we have a lot of the same conditions as far as anxiety disorder and depression and all this stuff. We have a lot of the same thing going on. And we think a lot. We both believe in Jesus. And I do. I'm so much head over heels in love with Doug that I call his voicemail just so I can hear his voice. I always tell him, you have the voice of an angel. I tell him how I feel about him. You know, he may be a lot older than me, but I guess, you know, if time passes on and, you know, whatever happens, happens. I'm going through hell right now, a lot of different kinds of emotional hell, because I'm worried about what's going to happen to my dad. I mean, I know it's all in God's hands, but when it boils down to it, I just wish I had more control of what happens to my dad. I don't want something bad to happen. Right now, he's home. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. He did make it home. God is good. God is great. And God is gracious. He let my dad come home. But, you know, he's still not out of the woods yet. And this is really the beginning of the end for my dad. I have got to start living and start trying to live my life. I've got to find where I fit in this world. I've got to start doing things that bring me enjoyment. And some of the things that bring me enjoyment are going to church, not some strange church that I don't know, but to the church where I grew up going, with some of the people that I grew up going to church with. And even if, you know, I just feel like I have to, I've got to start somewhere. I can't see myself not finding a way to fit in. I got to find my place in this world and do some things that I enjoy doing. It's something that I have to do. I've got to do it for myself. I have to do it for other people. I just have to do it. I got to start living. Because I feel like that, you know, I've already lost 2 years. And when my dad told me that he was basically being sent home to die, I started crying. I said, I've lost 2 years in this place, in which I have. You know, it's just too hard to even face the fact that I'm still here. And after 2 years, and in hindsight, this is crazy. I mean, I feel like I've fallen down a rabbit hole and can't get back out. Sometimes it seems like in life I'm playing a game of chutes and ladders. You know, I climb all the way up at the top, nearly at the top of one ladder, and I think I'm doing really well, and then I find out, no, I lose my footing only to fall down into a chute. The way I see it, when I'm doing good in the 8 months between serious infections and high fevers, that's when I'm climbing a ladder. When I'm having a high fever and I wind up in the hospital, that's when I fall down a chute. And when I wind up going to the hospital and then being placed in here, that was like falling into the abyss, as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, you know, at any level, I know God is good to me, and He's gonna bring me through this. It's just gonna take time, and it's gonna take, you know, a lot of time for me to get used to asking for help. And, you know, I'm hoping to find independence in a world that seems like that it's gonna be really difficult. But it's a challenge I'm ready to try to take. I'm 31 years old. If this would have been when I was 21, I would have been scared, even more scared. But I'm 31 years old now, and I got to start somewhere. So hopefully I can gain some independence from people and do things on my own. Anyway, I'm going to wrap this segment up. Be sure if you like the podcast that I'm putting out, you know, to subscribe and rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast from. And also, if you leave a voice message, you can. And you also have the opportunity, you can follow me on Twitter at a blind YouTuber with the underscore in between it. And then at Facebook, I'm Kelly Armstrong, Kelly Louise Armstrong. And then at on YouTube, I'm Kelly Louise. So, you know, you can find me there. And I will catch you in the next segment. Bye, and have a blessed day. Good morning. I just wanted to tell you that I have chronic pain as well as all these other things wrong with me. I take a variety of different medicines to help my pain. I take Lyrica and I take Percocet. And sometimes I even take Tylenol. It just depends. Lyrica I take routinely, as I have diabetic neuropathy. And I take Percocet to deal with the really bad pain. The pain that just comes up when you least expect it, and it hits you and you least expect it. And then Tylenol, sometimes I have to take several. I have to take two Tylenol at a time because one don't do it. But needless to say, I have chronic pain as well. Explaining further about my lymphedema, lymphedema is a condition in which the lymphatics don't work. If this condition had been caught early enough in my life, it would have not happened the way that it did. If I could have gotten the right care, and the right support at a younger age, then I would have been able to possibly, I'm not saying I wouldn't have had the condition, but I might not would have been so affected by it as I am. And, you know, a lot of these things people don't know or don't realize is that lymphedema could be environmental. It could be caused by mosquito bites. It could be caused by radiation. As a child, I had all these x-rays done on my kidney and bladder, not knowing what all this was doing to my body and what all this would cause me 25, 30 years down the road. No one ever knew the end results of this. So now here I am dealing with this disease. Lymphedema is not, it is not no longer in the back seat. It is now in the driver's seat, ruling every aspect of my life. There are places I cannot go because I'll look like a freak. There are places that I cannot go specifically because they'll see these places on my skin and they'll say, oh no, she can't come in our water. She's infected. She's this, she's that. When in all reality, it is scars from the past infections that I've had. A public pool. You can imagine all the kids that make fun of me. Unless they got somebody in their life that has this disease, then they're going to make fun. They're going to make fun and they're going to talk bad about me like I don't exist. I've had this happen not even being in a public pool or anything. Nothing even related to swimming at all. I was in a restaurant with my grandmother and this idiot, he's blabbering. He says, what's a person like her even doing in society? And I heard him, and this lady came over, looked like she'd been literally through a war. Her face was all blackened and bruised, and her eyes were black. She just looked like she was just beat up from, just torn up from the floor up. She just looked terrible. So, anyway, she told me, and it really made me feel bad. And, you know, the way I see it is, if anybody wants to be out in the community, if they got the strength, they got the willpower to want to do it, it doesn't matter if they are in a wheelchair and on oxygen and have two or three support workers with them. If they want to go into the community, why not? Because the world should be for everybody, not for big talking asshole people who don't know nothing, absolutely nothing about disease or disability and don't care. Who knows? The guy was probably out of his mind anyway. But, you know, it's been really a hard life to live, knowing from a young age, I could tell from a very young age that I was different. Really, it was about that age that I started, not really so much as, first of all, I went through a program, and it was like babies. They're working with babies in this program. This is the Dallas Services preschool for the blind, basically, is what it amounts to. And they do all kinds of things with the kids. They take them on outings. They do all kinds of things. You know, it's just various different things they do with the kids. And needless to say, when the kids get older and get bigger, then they go into the mainstream public school. And at this point in the time, in the 90s, they did not know what to do with the blind child. So what did they do with me? I went right into what would nowadays be called a life skills class. Essentially, there was people with autism, people with Down syndrome, people who were immobilized in a wheelchair, couldn't talk, couldn't respond to nothing or nobody. I don't really know what they were capable of, but they couldn't really do anything. And then the next thing I know, then there's kids who can talk and everything, and yet they're blind. And that's the only thing wrong with them. And they're stuck in a class with kids like that. And they're expected to, you know, fill these feathers and zip zippers and button buttons and all kinds of stuff. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. Seriously. You know, because even at a young age, I never understood why all this was happening to me. It's crazy. You never know what you're going to get yourself into. And after that, I was at Hamby for a year. And then I wound up going to another place. And it was a new school. And it was McWhorter Elementary. And then I finally wound up at Seaburn, and then they put me back into a preschool class. And needless to say, I was really too old to be in a preschool class by this point. I should have been in kindergarten learning how to read and write. But I remember my mom taking my hand in kindergarten. The kindergarten class that was at McWhorter. I remember my mom taking my hand in hers and we were feeling hand over hand how the letters are made. And she'd write capital F, lowercase f, capital F, lowercase f. And she would, you know, to show me what they were. And she always gave me printed letters and stuff to play with and magnets and all kinds of stuff. You know, my mom, in spite of me being blind, I do have an idea of what letters look like. I can actually see to read some. I could see to read the print that's on boxes or the title part of a book. I could also see to read, you know, the print that's on money. You know, it's just, I can identify things like that. But as far as sitting and reading something, no, I cannot. And I recently had an issue that is very much making me think that it is a cause for a discrimination lawsuit. I'm in a nursing home. I get $60 a month. Part of this comes from the Department of Health and Human Service, and it is the comptroller office that sends me this check. Well, needless to say, they send me this check, and I tried to have it put in a direct deposit. Well, they sent this thing back telling me or my family that it wasn't my handwriting, so they wouldn't accept it. Are they so stupid and ignorant and dumb that they don't realize that I can't see? What is wrong with these people? It's really making me so mad. I'm so frustrated. For once, I just want to end this and go home and not have to deal with this anymore. Any of it. Health and Human Service, the comptrollers, the disrespectful people that don't have a care in the world about anybody. I just want to go home. I very much feel like I can handle things myself, and I don't give a hoot. I think that I'm ready to take on the world. I've learned to transfer. That's all I needed to learn. Everything else is gravy as far as I'm concerned. I will make it on my own. I'm so tired of people thinking less of me just because I, you know, may have a few issues and might need an extra hand. But I can do more than what people give me credit. And I'm ready to get out of here. This place is making me crazy. But enough of that. Back to what I was talking about. Really, you know, from an early age, I knew I was different. Kids treated me differently. They sometimes would try to be a friend, and then sometimes they would turn against me. I never knew from one day to the next what I was gonna get out of the kids at school, which was really scary. It was a frightening prospect, to say the least. You know, going to school blind was really something. And it was really something whenever you knew you were the odd one out. I always used to try, I would buy notebooks and stuff and these journals that you see. I'd buy these things, and then when everybody else sat down to write, I would try to practice their handwriting and stuff in the way that I could do it. And really, I hated being told, you can't do this and you can't do that. It just made me want to try harder is what it did. I mean, it just fueled my fire. Everything they told me I couldn't do, I was like, watch me. I hated being told I can't do. because I know that I can. That's the thing. Deep down inside, I know I can. And that's why I have officially started my process to get out of here. I'm waiting to find out what's going to happen with my dad. I will know something more. And then I'm going to talk clearly with my mama and my cousin about how we're going to do this thing. Because the social worker already wants to talk to my mom and my cousin. Because she wants to know more about what to do, you know, with my case. So anyway, with that said, this concludes another episode, another segment in my podcast. God bless you all, and thanks for listening to my podcast. You know where to find me. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at Blind YouTuber. I am on Facebook.
Hi, and good morning. I just wanted to tell you that I have chronic pain as well as all these other things wrong with me. I take a variety of different medicines to help my pain. I take Lyrica, and I take Percocet, and sometimes I even take Tylenol. It just depends. Lyrica I take routinely as I have diabetic neuropathy. And I take Percocet to deal with the really bad pain. The pain that just comes up when you least expect it. And it hits you and you least expect it. And then Tylenol, sometimes I have to take several. I have to take two Tylenol at a time because one don't do it. But needless to say, I have chronic pain as well. Explaining further about my lymphedema. Lymphedema is a condition in which the lymphatics don't work. But this condition had been caught early enough in my life, it would have not happened the way that it did. If I could have gotten the right care, and the right support at a younger age, then I would have been able to possibly, I'm not saying I wouldn't have had the condition, but I might not would have been so affected by it as I am. And you know, a lot of these things people don't know or don't realize is that lymphedema could be environmental. It could be caused by mosquito bites. It could be caused by radiation. As a child, I had all these x-rays done on my kidney and bladder not knowing what all this was doing to my body and what all this would cause me 25, 30 years down the road. No one ever knew the end result to this. So now here I am dealing with this disease. Lymphedema is not, it is not no longer in the back seat. It is now in the driver's seat, ruling every aspect of my life. There are places I cannot go because I'll look like a freak. There are places that I cannot go specifically because they'll see these places on my skin and they'll say, oh no, she can't come in our water. She's infected. She's this, she's that. When in all reality, it is scars from the past infections that I've had. A public pool. You can imagine all the kids that make fun of me. Unless they got somebody in their life that has this disease, then they're going to make fun. They're going to make fun and they're going to talk bad about me like I don't exist. I've had this happen not even being in a public pool or anything. Nothing even related to swimming at all. I was in a restaurant with my grandmother and this idiot, he's blabbering. He says, what's a person like her even doing in society? And I heard him, and this lady came over, looked like she had been literally through a war. Her face was all blackened and bruised, and her eyes were black. She just looked like she was just beat up from, just torn up from the floor up. She just looked terrible. So anyway, she told me, and it really made me feel bad. And, you know, the way I see it is, if anybody wants to be out in the community, if they got the strength, they got the willpower to want to do it, it doesn't matter if they are in a wheelchair and on oxygen and have two or three support workers with them. If they want to go into the community, why not? Because the world should be for everybody, not for big talking asshole people who don't know nothing, absolutely nothing about disease or disability and don't care. Who knows? The guy was probably out of his mind anyway. But, you know, it's been really a hard life to live knowing from a young age. I could tell from a very young age that I was different. Really, it was about that age that I started Not really so much as, first of all, I went through a program and it was like babies. They're working with babies in this program. This is the Dallas Services preschool for the blind, basically, is what it amounts to. And they do all kinds of things with the kids. They take them on outings. They do all kinds of things. You know, it's just various different things they do with the kids. And needless to say, when the kids get older and get bigger, Then they go into the mainstream public school. And at this point in the time, in the 90s, they did not know what to do with the blind child. So what did they do with me? I went right into what would nowadays be called a life skills class. Essentially, there was people with autism, people with Down syndrome, people who were immobilized in a wheelchair, couldn't talk, couldn't respond to nothing or nobody. I don't really know what they were capable of, but they couldn't really do anything. And then the next thing I know, then there's kids who can talk and everything, and yet they're blind, and that's the only thing wrong with them. And they're stuck in a class with kids like that, and they're expected to, you know, fill these feathers and zip zippers and button buttons and all kinds of stuff. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. Seriously. You know, because even at a young age, I never understood why all this was happening to me. It's crazy. You never know what you're going to get yourself into. And after that, I was at Hamby for a year, and then I wound up going to another place, and it was a new school, and it was McWhorter Elementary. And then I finally wound up at Seaburn, and then they put me back into a preschool class. And needless to say, I was really too old to be in a preschool class by this point. I should have been in kindergarten learning how to read and write. But I remember my mom taking my hand in kindergarten, the kindergarten class that was at McWhorter. I remember my mom taking my hand in hers, and we were feeling hand over hand how the letters are made, and she'd write capital F, lowercase f, capital F, lowercase f. And she would, you know, she'd show me what they were. And she always gave me printed letters and stuff to play with, and magnets and all kinds of stuff. You know, my mom, in spite of me being blind, I do have an idea of what letters look like. I can actually see to read some. I can see to read the print that's on boxes or the title part of a book. I could also see to read, you know, the print that's on money. You know, it's just, I can identify things like that. But as far as sitting and reading something, no, I cannot. And I recently had an issue that is very much making me think that it is a cause for a discrimination lawsuit. I'm in a nursing home. I get $60 a month. Part of this comes from the Department of Health and Human Service, and it is the comptroller office that sends me this check. Well, needless to say, they sent me this check, and I tried to have it put in direct deposit. Well, they sent this thing back telling me or my family that it wasn't my handwriting, so they wouldn't accept it. Are they so stupid and ignorant and dumb that they don't realize that I can't see? What is wrong with these people? It's really making me so mad. I'm so frustrated. For once, I just want to end this and go home and not have to deal with this anymore. Any of it. Health and Human Service, the comptrollers, the disrespectful people that don't have a care in the world about anybody. I just want to go home. I very much feel like I can handle things myself, and I don't give a hoot. I think that I'm ready to take on the world. I've learned to transfer. That's all I needed to learn. Everything else is gravy as far as I'm concerned. I will make it on my own. I'm so tired of people thinking less of me just because I, you know, may have a few issues and might need an extra hand. But I can do more than what people give me credit. And I'm ready to get out of here. This place is making me crazy. But enough of that. Back to what I was talking about. Really, you know, from an early age, I knew I was different. Kids treated me differently. They sometimes would try to be a friend, and then sometimes they would turn against me. I never knew from one day to the next what I was gonna get out of the kids at school, which was really scary. It was a frightening prospect, to say the least. You know, going to school blind was really something. And it was really something whenever you knew you were the odd one out. I always used to try, I would buy notebooks and stuff and these journals that you see. I'd buy these things, and then when everybody else sat down to write, I would try to practice their handwriting and stuff in the way that I could do it. And really, I hated being told, you can't do this and you can't do that. It just made me want to try harder is what it did. I mean, it just fueled my fire. Everything they told me I couldn't do, I was like, watch me. I hated being told I can't do, because I know that I can. That's the thing. Deep down inside, I know I can. And that's why I have officially started my process to get out of here. I'm waiting to find out what's gonna happen with my dad. I will know something more, and then I'm gonna talk clearly with my mama and my cousin about how we're gonna do this thing, because the social worker already wants to talk to my mom and my cousin. Because she wants to know more about what to do, you know, with my case. So anyway, with that said, this concludes another episode, another segment in my podcast. God bless you all, and thanks for listening to my podcast. You know where to find me. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at Blind YouTuber. I am on Facebook.